I just would like to mention briefly something that's fascinated me now for a number of years. If we accept the idea of humankind coming out of Africa, the out of Africa theory, then we have to recognize that the only way out of Africa to the rest of the planet is through this area. Right? We are the connecting bridge between Africa, Asia, and Europe. And of course, from there, you know, people went off to the Americas and Australia. So we really have that quality of connectingness. And the thing of being the West Coast of Asia, several years ago somebody started to turn me on about, you know, the West Coast is like the hip place, right? I'm from the West Coast, right? We're from L.A., right? And then he said, well, you know, we're on the West Coast. And I says, what are you talking about? He says, the West Coast of Asia. And that's right. This is the western coast of Asia. We are, and I think that's interesting. Moshe, you had your hand up. This is quite a little classroom, huh?
I wanted to mention, I've been dealing with the Tao for, I don't know, 20 years by now, maybe more. I spent a long time in a Zendo. Anyway, the thing I wanted to mention was in relation to the Orient, is that Abraham, we always talk about Abraham has two sons, right. Isaac and Ishmael. But he's got eight children. And Yitzchak reminded me of this. I mean, he makes this point all the time. Six of them went Kedma, to the east. Now, you sent me an article a summary of an article, Menachem, this will interest you, of a guy who writes in the Chinese Journal of Medicine that the places in which Jews put their phylacteries, tefillin, are exactly the same places where, according to acupuncture, are the places where you put the needles. I tracked it down.
Oh, you did.
And I wrote to the editor, and I'm waiting for a response. If I don't hear from him in a week, I'll send him another note. And the point is that the places where the needles go are exactly in the same places on the meridian lines of the body that tend to connect with the quest for spirituality. In other words, somewheres or another, there is this connection that we are simply now just getting into. The only other place I read about this kind of stuff of spirituality and education and the arts is with Sarkar. Sarkar is in India. He created the Ananda Marga. He's now dead. But the Ananda Marga, and these are the guys who came to our conference when we did this in Beit Yatziv, a movement that deals with education on a spiritual basis. And their education is mostly visual arts. The magic of India is its arts, basically. We, as Jews, or at least Israeli, I don't know, we have to deal with this issue of not the artist. I keep on reminding myself of the Aman. The artist is ultimately the one who tells the biggest lie with the straightest face. This is why Plato never let him in the Republic. We're talking about the Aman. The Aman is the Amen, the Emunah. It's a huge difference, and you taught me that, Menachem. But the Amen. The Amen is to train, to educate. So basically, we as Jews, we have swallowed hook, line, and sinker a European worldview, made it into a pastiche with some Jewish stuff floating around, and this is our rah-rah-rah Zionism, and then we're surprised it doesn't work, or at least it's having difficulties, to put it mildly. Okay, so the question is, what is this now, how do you deal with the specificity on a global scale? This is really what intrigues me in cyberspace, in Siberia. In other words, how do you say the Shema, Not how do you use the regular prayer book, but what's the next stages? What's the next leap into this consciousness business?
In the book, I'm just finishing on the truth about Judas Iscariot. I tell about two very remarkable characters that lived in the same time, same area. The Mekubal, Rabbi Avraham Abulafia, and the monk Ramon Lul, or Saint Ramon Lul, who is considered by some as the great grandfather of the computer. And I've showed amazing parallels between them. In the last moment, I discovered that it's the greatest Kabbalah researcher, Idel, has already written a couple of papers on that. Thought I discovered about it. And what were they doing? Both of them were developing methods of speeding up the mental processes in a huge way. Some of the, when I studied about meditation, it was some kind of Indian variety where the idea was to still the mind, to calm, to quiet, no thoughts whatsoever.
No,
that was considered the best. These two characters were training the mind to go on overdrive, to go speedily, to survey all possibilities. What Ramon Lul has seen in a flash of a moment on Mount Randa in Mallorca, he later wrote over 260 books, about 250,000 of pages, or maybe I'm exaggerating, of words. No, I think it was of pages, but something that boggles the mind. Because everything was so much quickening in him. He could see it all happening. Interestingly, the two characters had more or less the same idea, each still from his perspective, about unifying the religions. Because Abulafia went to teach the Pope about Yahadut Klal, about universal Judaism. And I explained what it might mean. And Ramon Lul thought about retying back Christianity, Islam, and Judaism, and to stand against the invading Mongols at the time. But there was already this kind of visions of universalization going along with this tremendous speeding up of processes, and I think that this speeding up is the thing which characterizes our time, the future shock idea, the need to learn and relearn so quickly, changing generations within one's lifetime, already few generations happening, brothers belonging to different generations. So suddenly you discover that you have to relearn how to communicate across generations, and so just to keep your family intact. And as I say, it's not just generations of fathers and sons, as the literature was full of and as so many people think is a problem of the world. It's generations among brothers. And so conception, comprehension has to go and bridge so many things. See something in all its many varieties and see it all connected, all as one. One of the words which are becoming a currency, like systems were before and networks were just becoming, is multidimensional. The ability to comprehend higher dimensions. Most people use the term just like they would use any other term to mean more of something. But actually, it's a very precise term, multidimensional perception, multidimensional awareness. And this is some of the things which are happening in the culture, which I think, again, something in our tradition is akin to this. And that, to my mind, what the temple is a trainer in going through dimensions, a multidimensional portal, to use the term of TV shows.
No, it's interesting. I talked about the different chapters in the book, and I wanted to make it multicultural, you know. And so I have an Islamic professor in Turkey to write about Islamic art in relation to the digital age. And he wrote a very interesting paper, and the paper is, I forgot the exact title, it's something like, it's to quiet medium bombardment. In other words, he was saying that the Islamic pattern, repetitive patterns, is this meditative kind of thing. When you get media information overload in a digital age, that's the quieting. That provides a quieting mechanism. Interesting. And that's what his whole thing is about, the educational value of the quieting mechanism of the Islamic patterns, you know.
True. I read once something very interesting about what makes good football players or baseball players. And what is happening with them is that for the baseball player, the ball, as he approaches him, moves much, much slower than for most of us. We just see something flashing there, next moment we don't know. And he sees something coming and coming and coming to him, and he can dance with this and train his body to intercept it in the right way. And he has more time to do it, because his type of meditation is in the middle of the fastest, most demanding action. And I think this is the kind of meditation that is... the times are needing.
The thing that came to mind when you were talking about that and the Tao is that one of the most well-known temples in all of China is Shaolin, which is dedicated to two things. One is the martial arts, and the other is Taoism. And what does the Tao do? What do the martial arts do? They take a spear or a sword or whatever it is that is flashed. I mean, you're talking about multiples of fractions of seconds. And somehow or another make that into a dance that you can begin then to move around it and move with it. All of martial arts is basically built around how you deal with breath. With neshama, nishima, what we call soul. And how you take this thing which is so fast, like a ball floating around, whatever it is, and you control it. You don't have to control the ball. You control the energy around it. Mm-hmm. That's the whole chokhmah.
Going back to art again, I mean, if you know, I think that art needs to be this dialogic kind of art, where it is between two kind of people, many people, you know, and multi-dialogue, you know, multi-log or whatever, that happens. And that's what the network, I mean, Yitzchak used the word networking of how do people interact with other people, or network in internationally over through the internet. And I think web art, the art on the web, is going to be, you know, a really important thing. The idea of center kinds of places to put things. I mean, if you want to take a comparable thing to synagogue, I sort of almost wipe out synagogue as the future. I mean, I'm not interested in synagogue. I don't think that's where Judaism of the future is. And that people in America are abandoning going to synagogues or trying to build alternative ones. I don't think that's where Judaism is. And I see it in its relationship to everyday life. And you don't need. Let's take a comparable center from another world, the museum. Okay, as a building that people could come together to experience art. Right. This is the modern church. You know.
This is the original meaning of what museion was. The museion was the temple to the goddesses, the muses. There are 9 classic muses. This was set up in Alexandria, in Egypt. Not one of those 9 relates to the visual arts. Not one. And it never did. It dealt with either poetry or dance. When nation states started to become significant and monarchies became, they collected stuff, and then the stuff became public, and then they took that name and put it on the label of this publicly accessible visual art stuff for the masses. But originally it was a spiritual, a quest, which was open to anybody who was then a Greek citizen and later a Roman citizen. It's interesting. That's now becoming more and more. So what's really happening is, if the synagogue did its shtick, it did what it did, very nice, what is happening is that the consciousness and this multi-logos, logos is not word, like in the book of John in the New Testament. It's the concept that makes things function.
It's multi-conceptualizations.
And it's the way that you tell your mythos, your story. The histoire is a story. We are not Am HaSipur. We are not Am HaSefer. Thank God we are Am HaSipur. We are the people of the story. And whatever way you can tell the story, that's the way you do it for that generation. So what is taking the place is exactly what is happening in these alternative synagogues, where they're bringing in music, they're bringing in theater, they're bringing in storytelling as an adjunct to or as a supplement to the Matbea Shel Tefillah.
Mm-hmm. Just say something that hit me through your saying. I'm thinking about the Torah or the Tanakh and the New Testament and the Quran. The Quran calls the people of Judaism and Christianity people of the book. And the whole point about Muhammad and so is that now we Arab speakers have a book of our own. But there's no story there. I mean, if you open the Quran, it doesn't go from anywhere, doesn't lead anywhere. It just goes on and on and on. It has no structure. Whereas the Torah is a great sipur. Mashal, how do you say, kadmono shel olam? What's a mashal kadmoni? It's a sipur that started the world. Not just a journal of one prophecy and then another and then another. It's like a Shelot v'tshuvot, a question and answer type of scriptures, which we have lots of them also. But the Torah itself, Meshal HaKadmonim, is a Sipur. And we are, in fact, as you said, it's the Am HaSipur rather than Am HaSefer.
Yeah, I see it as three things. I think that, the Sefer Yetzirah, which is considered the oldest of the Kabbalistic books attributed to Avraham Avinu, and it starts off with Hakadosh Baruch Hu Boret Olamo im Shloshas Sfarim, okay, Sefer. Svar v'sipur, okay, that he created the world with three books or sefer, whatever.
Sipur.
And so you have, but I think what they mean.
Exactly what I marked in.
I think what they mean. First of all, let me talk about the Sefer Sipur and Svar is Mispar is number. And I see it as, well, originally I came to art as a biologist. I mean, I'm formally educated as a biologist. And so I see it from life systems point of view. And I think we have, if we look at the three Sipurim, you know, that we have Sefer, and Sefer is form, Tzura, form. The Sefer Torah is the form of the spiral. If we don't, an SPR, Samech Peresh, is a spiral. Okay, S, same root, S, and so it's a spiral, and it's right, and just an add, L added to spiral, SPR, and the SPR root, you know, and I understand the Samech Peresh is all ancient languages, Akkadian and Aramaic, and all people about, but then it goes into modern language, it becomes spiral, you know, and but it's interesting, yeah, but spiral also is the root of spiritual in English, SPR. It's the root of inspiration in English. And so that word, Samech Peresh, becomes spiritual in inspiration when it comes from Greek to Latin to English. I think that, going back to the Sefer Yetzirah, so I think that, and Sefer is so important. I mean, the form is so important in Judaism that if you change the form, even with the same content, it loses all its meaning. For instance, in your Bet Knesset, if it's time to read the Torah on Shabbat, and if you don't have it in the form of a spiral, right, and you have it in a chumash, in a book form, you know, in a codex form, you can't read it. No, it's the exact same. It's even better. It has the
pisuk,
right? It has more information. It has the pisuk and the tamei mikra and the nekud and it. But you don't read anything rather than to read the exact same content. So the medium is the message. And if you don't have the Ein Sofiyut, the Zrima of the Torah, that's a Mobius strip of endlessness, you can't put the Torah between two covers and trap it like a malben. We were enslaved. I talked about that before. We're enslaved in a rectangle. Malben, which is a brickyard, is also rectangle. And so I think that the Sefer is this form that's so essential here. And then the Mispar but the form is also the encoding of divine message in the Torah is in a double helix, just like the encoding of all of life forms is in a double helix of the DNA. And if you go to Mispar, we know that the Mispar decides on the quality of things in the world. Like, what's the difference between oxygen and helium? Helium's got one more proton and one electron. You know, oxygen has eight of them. You know, eight protons and eight electrons. If you had six electrons, then it's carbon. If you have 26, you got gold. If you have 96, you got uranium. 96, you got uranium. The biggest, but it's the number of electrons, protons. It's the order in the number of DNA molecules that you have. I tell my students, for instance, you know, if you have an extra one of the 21st chromosome, if you have an extra one instead of two, you have three, triploidy of the 21st. That's Down syndrome. You see, just the number changes the whole quality, you know. And I tell my students, what happens if you have 16 pair instead of 23 pair? Like seven differences, seven. We have 23 pair. What if you have 16? You're an onion. An onion has 16 pair. So what's the difference between you and an onion? It's seven pairs of DNA molecules. I mean, what a miracle idea. What an unbelievable idea. But with the whole amazing thing, it's all written with four letters, like Yud Kei Vav Kei or you know, I mean, all of life's forms are written with ATCG, you know, adenine, thymine, guanidine, and cyanine. And just those four, the sequence of those four determines whether you're an onion or a person or an oak tree. And when you do genetic engineering, my son, the rabbi in Yerucham, is also got his master's degree in genetic engineering and did cancer research, where you replace a piece in bladder cancer, you replace a piece of a mistaken DNA. But it doesn't matter where you take it from. You got to find that sequence in a tomato, and you can put it in a person. It doesn't matter whether it's from a dog or a person or a tomato or an olive. It's the same DNA sequence. You got to find the right sequence. But the next thing, you know. So I mean, and then the sipur, like Yitzchak said, the sipur is the process. You know, is the story. And like in biology, what's the most important story is photosynthesis. You know, there'd be no life on this planet if green plants couldn't take water and oxygen and carbon dioxide and make oxygen and glucose. I mean, all the food and oxygen on this planet is in that sipur. So I think you have that kind of thing when God created the world, it sounds like mysticism. When God created the world with sephes, fire, and sipur, but scientists know that's true.
Just wanted to add a little point on this from what I told earlier about those two mystics in the 13th century Spain, that Ramon Llull, he wanted to convince the Moors, the Muslims, about the truth of the Trinity. Abraham Abulafia went to tell the Pope about converting from the Trinity to the Quaternary of Yod Hei Vav Hei. Uterabea b'meshulash. This is what I fathomed in the end, was at the bottom of all his constructions. Both were geometers. Ramon Llull, in fact, wrote a geometry book where the first construction there is how to square the circle, and the second one is how to square the triangle. And one of his hundreds of books. But it was precisely upon this business of turning from the very interesting by itself, dynamic trinity, into the quaternary, which has more life in it. And in the 20th century, it was Jung, son of a Protestant minister, who was very much going in this business of going from the three to the four.
Enough said. How's that?
Thank you very much.
Would you like to say that again, please?
That's acceptable.